Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia and this is the space where we talk honestly about what it really takes to stay emotionally and mentally well in today's world. Whether you're navigating personal relationships, professional pressures, or just trying to keep up, this show is for you. Today we're exploring a side of leadership that often goes unspoken. The internal weight leaders carry, the quiet burnout behind big titles, and the pressure to always have the answers. My guest is someone who doesn't just understand leadership, he's helping reshape it. Chris Beswick is a former CEO and now a globally recognized thought leader in innovation strategy and leadership development. For over two decades, he's worked with executive teams and boards across the world, helping them build resilient cultures, rethink performance, and most importantly, lead with authenticity. But what sets Chris apart is that he doesn't just focus on innovation. He speaks openly about vulnerability, mental resilience, and the emotional well-being of those at the very top. Chris, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Belinda. It's my pleasure.
Before we dive into our conversation, for those who may not know your full journey, can you start by sharing a little more about yourself and what led you to the work you're doing today?
Yeah, sure. So, like many people in doing what I do, and many sort of people professional people my age, I've had lots of different facets to my career. I started out as an entrepreneur, obviously learning how to build businesses the hard way when you do it yourself from scratch. And I then was really fortunate to build an absolutely superb team in sort of the early 2000s, and built a group of companies, which I managed to exit in 2008, actually, literally 6 days before Lehman Brothers crashed. So super lucky with the timings there. And then once I'd exited that that group of companies, I then moved into the work that you've just brilliantly described. So the leadership development, coaching, innovation, consultancy space. And yeah, that's what I do now. You summed it up brilliantly. I work globally as a C-suite advisor on innovation, strategy, leadership and culture.
That's an incredible journey from building businesses that the hard way, really, to right before the financial crash as well. And that timing really is remarkable. It sounds like your transition into leadership and innovation consultancy was a natural progression. And what drew you most to that space? I mean, before all of this, Chris, you've worked with high-level leaders and boards for decades. And what's changed in the way leadership is discussed today, I mean, especially around mental health?
The main thing that I really learned was how important culture was. And even in a very, very small team, you know, and we talk about it now, the importance of how leaders build the right kind of cultures in organizations. But it's always talked about in big organizations where there's, you know, dozens or maybe hundreds or even thousands of people. And no one ever talks about the importance of culture in small organizations, because I think the assumption is that, you know, when you're a small sort of scrappy startup, which is how I started, that there's only a few of you. So culture's great because there's only a few and you all get along and you've all got this common purpose. But what I realized was, it was still so important for me as the founder to really like proactively shape that culture on a day-to-day basis. It wasn't good enough for the culture that we had just to emerge and evolve. But the challenge is, in terms of the mental health side, is that's another component of pressure. So if I look at the leaders and the executives that I either work with now or that I observe, the amount of different things that are, you know, all tiny, tiny little bits of pressure. You know, there's lots and lots of small things that leaders have to do and that everyone has to do in an organization. But the pressure on leaders to proactively and consciously design the future, and it's just so immense. And culture's one of those parts of that where, you know, if you don't get strategy right, the organization doesn't push forward in the way that it should do. If you don't get the finances right, the organization doesn't perform financially and you may miss targets. And I'm not saying those things don't then have a knock-on effect in terms of people, but absolutely directly, if you don't get culture right, that fundamentally affects people straight away. The pressure on leaders to be present and positive and strategic and visionary and purpose-led is immense. Listen, we've had a classic example of this. Look at what happened in the House of Commons with the tears and all the news saying, oh, what's going wrong, and then we've had Keir Starmer having to say, oh, well, it was a personal matter, and everyone else in the UK going, yeah, I don't believe that for a minute. Look at the knock-on effect that that's had around what people believe is going on there, whether people believe that there's now a lie to cover that up. Culturally, that's almost like a hand grenade. The pin's been pulled and the hand grenade's gone off. And that kind of effect we have to manage as leaders on a day-to-day basis. So it's another component to the stress and the mental sort of pressure that leaders are under, but culture is one of those things that is instantly visible.
Of course, what you're saying touches on a real tension and the human need for leaders to be authentic and vulnerable versus the societal expectations that they always I have to be composed, clear, and in control, I suppose. And the example you gave us where the Commons moment you mentioned was a perfect public example, how quickly emotion became speculation and speculation turned into mistrust. And it highlights how perception shapes reality in leadership.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. And in your work with CEOs and executives, what are some very common but overlooked signs of burnout then? Because if there are personal matters like the example you gave us, and how can you pick up on those signs? What is it that you suggest to people as well, if there is a sign of burnout or personal issues such as that?
So the challenge, what we don't see typically, is people don't spot the signs. And if people do spot the signs, what we still don't have, especially in the corporate world, what we still don't have is enough people willing to say, hey, are you okay? And especially when that's maybe someone in a junior position spotting something of someone in a very senior position. It's a really difficult ask for someone lower down an organization just to say, you know, maybe to go to the CFO or the CEO or, you know, one of the C-suite to say, you know, to observe something. You know, there's lots and lots of cues that where you look at people and you say, is that person okay? But think of this in a family situation, you'd probably say something. But in the corporate world, think how difficult it would be for someone to approach a senior executive in an organization and go, hey, are you okay? Or, you know, little things like that where you just spot things and you think, that person just doesn't look okay. Imagine how difficult that is for someone to approach a senior executive and say, hey, you don't look all right, are you okay? And and bear in mind, that's if those signals are there, that's if you spot something. To your point about being vulnerable, the big challenge in the corporate world is we've been taught for decades, 10, 20, 30, 40, since management and leadership sort of coaching started, executives have been taught not to be vulnerable. And they've been taught not to show weakness. And they've been taught that they should have the answer. Being slightly dictatorial is the way forward because you should be out in front. Leadership means you're out in front and people follow and you give clear direction and you know the answers and you know where the business is going and you're going to get us there. And all of that means we hide, and most leaders hide the signs that they're not all right. And the irony is, what we really want from leaders is the behavior and the ability to lead in a way that if those things are there and if that person isn't right, it would be instantly visible and obvious. Because of the way we want them to lead, those signs would be instantly obvious. Or they may themselves say, "Guys, I'm not all right with this at the moment, and I'm going to need you to make some decisions." That's the new contemporary way we need leaders to lead, but the world isn't fully there yet.
And that kind of openness, a leader saying, "I'm not okay right now, and I need your support," is powerful. It creates psychological safety for the entire team.
Absolutely. Yeah,
And
absolutely.
it does tell people that being human isn't a liability, it's a leadership quality. And ironically, rather than eroding respect, I think it often builds trust because when a leader acknowledges their limits, it invites others to step up, to collaborate, and to lead from where they are. And it flattens the hierarchy, doesn't it, in the best way, not by removing the structure, but by, I would say, distributing strength. But of course, although we've spoken about what we would like to change and what we're hoping to change, there's still those high performers who often find it hardest to admit they're not coping. And how can we start breaking down that silence? What can people like yourself do? What can we do to support that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think utopia for me would be a real macro solution that we could widely distribute that would solve this. But I think we're still at the point where the best way that this starts to get resolved, I think, is still through personal coaching. So what you need with senior executives is you need proximity. You need to see them and observe them and build a relationship with them and understand them enough so that you can spot those signs, even if the signs aren't really, really visible to everyone else. And to do that you have to spend time with them. And the best people to spot these things are coaches. A lot of the leaders and a lot of the C-suite that I work with have all at some point had coaches. And I'm a real advocate of more senior executives having coaches. But and I don't just mean personal, I mean personal and business, but someone to bounce ideas off, someone to say, "Listen, today was tough, right? 12 hours of board meetings, some difficult questions from the city. I've got government on my back about A, B, and C policy. Yeah, I struggled today." And you have to offload that. And I genuinely think coaching for senior executives is a really underrated resource that organizations should have in place for the whole of the C-suite. Because what's the cause and effect, right? The cause and effect is the organization suffers because decisions are made with short-term emotional thinking rather than long-term thinking. So, you know, decisions are made emotionally.
Yes.
And they can sometimes be rash, they can be wrong, they can be fueled by way, way more bias than would normally be fueling someone's thinking. They can be fueled by like the wrong kind of emotions. You know, stress isn't a great, you know, driver of making the right decision. Mm-hmm. But secondly, and you know, if you look at what happened in my situation when I went through this, the silent sort of casualties of this are our family. So let's say you've got, let's take me, right? 52-year-old, I mean, I'm not an exec in a company, but let's take me as a proxy. 52-year-old, you know, typical middle-aged white male senior exec, CEO of ABC company, huge pressure. Yes, what people see are the trappings of that. They see huge salary and multi-million pound house and the Porsche, and you know, they see all of the trappings of that. But what you don't see on the inside is that person is dying on the inside, personally, trying to maintain this external persona as the successful CEO that will guide the organization to the future that everyone wants. The silent casualties are then, you know, who's the main punching bag, metaphorically, and I don't mean physically, metaphorically. When that CEO goes back home, typically the wife or girlfriend or the partner.
Yeah.
And what we don't see is what happens outside the work environment, where that stress then has to, you know, that stress has to come out somewhere, and all of that tension and everything has to come out. So, you know, the wideness of the effects of stress and burnout and mental health, the effect is so profound and so widespread. Like I can tell you in my instance, you know, I went through this, I probably was burning out for a couple of years, and I literally hit the wall. I was completely burnt out. That's why I ended up selling my companies, because I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what the next part of my life was going to look like, but I knew that I had to stop doing what I was doing. Otherwise, and I'm not being dramatic, but if I hadn't have stopped, I would have killed myself in some way.
Oh, gosh.
And I mean that in terms of, potentially, I might have committed suicide. I was definitely drinking too much. I was 2-3 stone overweight. I was super unhealthy. But externally, running this amazing business with a great culture and great people doing great work. Internally, completely dying. It was cancerous. And then the victim, if you like, the victims of that situation for me was my partner at the time and my family and friends. So it cannot be underestimated how significant and how dangerous getting mental health wrong, and definitely as an executive, the massive, massive impact of burnout is at executive level. The casualties are so far and so wide and can be so deep. We have to get a grip of it for executives.
And thank you for sharing that so openly. And that kind of honesty is incredibly rare, especially from someone who was still outwardly winning by every traditional business matrix.
And absolutely. If you look at all the KPIs, you know, big house, just about to buy another one, you know, Porsche on the driveway, another couple of cars, all of those external trappings were all superficial wrapping paper that was covering up something that inherently inside was just, I was so unhappy at the time, but everyone looking in must have been, was thinking, wow, this guy's nailed it. Look at the house, the cars, the holidays, the trappings of success. But when you look back, all of it is absolutely valueless. It's totally valueless. Do you know one of the first things I did when I sold my companies? So bear in mind, I've sold my companies now, so money's not an object. Yeah. The first thing I did was I sold my Rolex, because it was a symbol of everything that I didn't want to be, but thought I had to be in order to survive in that situation.
Gosh, what you're describing is the perfect storm, with those high expectations and no release valve and no room for vulnerability initially. But actually, moving on from that, it's powerful that you did stop. Okay, thank you so much, Chris. This is such a powerful and timely discussion, I think. We'll be right back with more from Chris Beswick in just a moment. But first, here's a short break with a word from our sponsors here on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia and I'm here with leadership advisor and innovation expert Chris Beswick as we dig into the realities of leading in today's complex, emotionally demanding world. Now, Chris, before the break, you were talking about that vulnerability and sharing your realization right there when everything was really about to explode. Can you share that moment when the body and mind were screaming stop within you?
Yeah, and that scream is silent. And I think that's part of the challenge that that makes it difficult to spot this stuff. But, in my own situation, I can't tell you why I did this. My only, and there may be, people out there who know, from a psychology point of view, they may have the answer to this. And I've never asked anyone officially, but I can't tell you why I called stop on the situation that I was in. But at the height of everything, so all the stress, pressure, you're responsible for making sure you make salaries every month. You've got people's livelihoods and their families and their mortgage and their kids all rely on, on the business continuing and driving growth and all of that. And for some people thrive on that and some people are brilliant at it. That wasn't my forte. And I think that's why ultimately I was completely burnt out, and there are some other reasons, but that was part of it. But there was a moment in 2007, I sold my companies in 2008, but in 2007, and I genuinely, Belinda, cannot, I can't tell you why I did this. And the only rationalization I have is my brain just kicked into self-preservation mode. And I remember walking back to a hotel. I think I was in Leeds or Sheffield or somewhere. I was in the north of England. And I remember walking back to the hotel, another hotel, probably the third or fourth that week, walking back to a hotel to sit on my own, eating, you know, crappy food, junk food, you know, terrible diet, probably drinking too much, sat at the bar on my own. And I remember walking back to the hotel. This wasn't premeditated. I hadn't had any thoughts about leaving my businesses or anything. But I'm walking back to my hotel and I remember it as clear as day. It's like still now. My hand went into my pocket. This isn't conscious. This is now unconscious behavior. My hand went into my pocket. I dialed my partner, who was called Chris as well at the time. I dialed Chris on the phone and I literally said this: Chris, I'm done. I'm out. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm done. And I hung up. That phone call, and again, it's not, I'm not being dramatic, that phone call probably saved my life. And that wasn't premeditated. I think that was my brain going, I'm now stepping in because there needs to be an intervention and no one else is intervening. I'm now going to call the shots and I'm going to make a decision. And that was it. And 9 months later, I did a full exit. The moral of that is, I think I was really, really lucky in the fact that whatever happened in my brain, my self-preservation or something kicked in, and, you know, it wasn't conscious me making that phone call, but my brain took over. If you're really, really lucky, that will happen as a senior exec or someone going through, you know, through burnout. If you're lucky, that will happen to you as well.
Yeah.
If not, we're then relying on external forces, you know, other people making that, you know, metaphorically being our brain that intervenes, right? We rely on other people saying, hey, Chris, we need to sit down, dude, because you're just not all right. Like, you are not all right, and I think you need some help. Yeah. And that doesn't happen often enough. And the challenge for leaders is we need leaders to be vulnerable, one, so that we can help them, but second, because vulnerability is one of the key drivers of high performance in organizations. So if we can elicit this kind of behavior and openness and vulnerability in leaders, one, we can help keep them safe and we can help support them if they are struggling like I was. And two, we get the traits and the behavior and the mindset that drives innovation and high performance in organizations.
And you're spot on. Vulnerability isn't a weakness.
It's a superpower.
It's the gateway to trust, authenticity, yes, and high performing cultures, isn't it? When a leader says, I need help, it gives everyone else permission to do the same. And that openness really does enable environments where people aren't just surviving their roles, they're engaged, aligned, and again, they're being very human about the whole process, because that's the other thing. Sometimes high performers think they have to be very robotic and perform constantly.
Yeah.
So how do you personally manage your own well-being while constantly supporting others at such a high level now?
No one will ever, I don't think no one will ever have complete total control over their brain and their mind, right? So, so you know, even the most self-aware mental expert who understand sort of, you know, the way the brain works and psychology and all of those things, you know, even those people aren't 100% in control. Because we've got all of these forces, you know, we've got work pressure, we've got client demands, we've got home life, You know, I'm raising two young girls, you know, just about to end, you know, to enter being teenagers. You've got all of these forces. And they're all of these forces are, they're all chipping away at us. They're all tiny bits of stress. The key thing for me is, because of, I refer to the period and the thing that I went through, I refer to it as the sausage machine. Yeah. And I went into that sausage machine, and I was really fortunate that I came out the other side. Some people, using that metaphor, don't come out of that sausage machine. But having been through that and having reverse engineered everything and really unpacked, you know, why was my behavior like that? What was the driving force behind this behavior and how I treated those people and how I made these decisions? You know, what was the catalyst for it all? I'm so in tune now with how I think and how I make decisions. But I still, you know, I still get caught out. You know, sometimes I still, you know, I'll still say to myself, why did I just react like that? You know, why did I say that in that way? And why did I react to that question in that way from my wife or my kids or a client or whatever? But the point is, I'm now on the road to hopefully getting ahead of those situations and going, right, before I say that, how should I react? Rather than, you know, reacting and then going, oh, why did I say that in that way? And so the answer to your question is just being super alert and really conscious about my use of language, my body language, my behavior, my tone. And I think the best way to sum it up is it's about how you respond, not react. And shifting to a behavior that responds to things instead of reacts to things. That's the best way that I can sum up how I try and behave sort of, you know, psychologically and mentally now.
Absolutely. And being very mindful, I think, and becoming very self-aware when you do have that moment to reflect on behavior and how you have in the past reacted and the outcome of that reaction compared to how you respond and the outcome of that reaction as well, or response, I should say. Thank you so much, Chris. Let's take another short pause and we'll be right back. But first, a word from our sponsors here on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena-sensitive care pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena-sensitive care pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good, good. Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia and I'm joined by the amazing Chris Beswick as we continue this important conversation on emotional well-being, vulnerability and the future of modern leadership. So, Chris, can you tell us, you've mentioned before that innovation can't thrive without trust. What does trust look like in a team under pressure?
Well, whether a team is under pressure or not, you know, trust is incredibly important. So, you know, you mentioned earlier, an executive saying, look, you know, I don't have the answers here, or, you know, I need your support. You know, one of the really simple ways that manifests is not necessarily leaders or executives say, you know, getting to the point where they say, look, I don't have the answers here, I need you to make decisions. But just really simple ways that we start to build trust in organizations is an executive saying, okay, well, what do you guys think? Like, you give me some of your ideas, you know, to start to shift the emphasis on you as the leader must have all the ideas, we're coming to you. And you start to create situations in organizations where people then feel they can share ideas and they can be honest. And, you know, if you look at the work of people like, you know, Amy Edmondson, Francis Fry and people like that, who really understand psychological safety and radical candor and how to really shape culture on a human level. As leaders, we have to be, vulnerability doesn't mean, you know, you're going to sit down and cry in front of all your employees and pour your heart out about what's going wrong in your life. Vulnerability just means I'm going to share with you something that I did and a decision that I made just last week that didn't work out. And we're going to share with you why I made the decision and why it didn't work out. That in itself is just a really simple way to be vulnerable as an executive and show people that you are also a human being just like they are. Mm. And when you start to share stories like that and share examples, we're subtly starting to build psychological safety into organizations, because we're then starting to talk about it's okay to get something wrong as long as we build a learning culture in our organization that means, you know, we don't want people taking what I call cavalier risk, but we do want people taking what I call informed risk, i.e., you know, let's think about a situation, let's run all the different assumptions that we have about this situation and come to a solution where we think, let's try that. That's informed risk. You know, vulnerability allows you to be more creative because it allows you to say, rather than being a leader that says, I've got to get everything right and I have to get everything right first time and nothing can go wrong and we must meet those targets. If you allow yourself to be a little bit more vulnerable, now you allow curiosity and creativity to enter. From a mindset point of view, you allow curiosity and creativity to enter your vocabulary. And when you do that, now you say, okay, well, we could try that, but hey, why don't we... let's take a little bit of risk. Why don't we just try this thing over here? And if it goes wrong, we'll figure out why. Mm. And that shift in mindset, that is in part what Satya Nadella has implemented at Microsoft. That's growth mindset. It's one of the, you know, it's the start of lots of different parts of growth mindset. Those are the traits that we not just want in our leaders, we need in our leaders for high performance and specifically for innovation in organizations.
When leaders model that kind of openness, it sends a signal that failure isn't fatal here. Learning is valued and your voice is safe. And I think it's so important to have that at the heart of that psychological safety. But then, of course, there's those organizations that ignore that emotional well-being. And yeah, what's the real cost beyond retention and then people going off, you know, sick or being absent? What's your thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, listen, I'm going to share. A friend of mine, a good friend of mine in the US, a guy called John Hurst, He did a post on LinkedIn, and I printed it out for this conversation. And it's some research that's just been done, and it's the most important, the research is entitled The Most Important Indicators of Future Success by Country. So it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's got 10 countries just on this little screen grab. And basically by country, this survey is a poll of hundreds of thousands of people, I'm guessing, across these 10 countries. And it gives them 5 categories: physical and mental health, relationships, improving, growing as a person, relationships with your partner, and money. In 6 out of the 10, physical and mental health was the number one priority for people.
Yeah.
And the other 4 put it as number 2. So basically, in the top 2 categories, physical and mental health was the most important factor in terms of what people view success looks like in the future. Physical and mental health. And when people, and remember, people are our employees, mm-hmm. In essence, when our employees are telling us that physical and mental health is either the number one or the number two most important factor to their future success, as leaders, we have to then put physical and mental health as the number one or the number two indicator or condition for future success for our organizations. Because if we don't align our organizations and our cultures with the drivers that people are saying, this is what's important to me, then they'll go and work somewhere else.
Yes. It's a fundamental truth, isn't it? And finally, what message would you love to leave with every leader and our listeners who feel like they're holding it all together, but silently struggling?
Do you know what? If they are, having been through this myself, do you know what I wanted at the time? And when I say at the time, I didn't know this at the time. But afterwards, I just thought, why didn't someone say something to me? Because afterwards, like, you know, when I'd sort of announced I was leaving and I'd sort of, you know, and I said to friends and family, look, this is what I'm going through and stuff like that. Loads of people went, yeah, do you know, I knew something wasn't right. And I literally remember sitting there for weeks and weeks having conversations with different people going, why the hell didn't you say something to me?
Mm.
If anyone's out there, if there's an executive in there, do you know what? You don't have to be an executive. This is relevant to anyone, right? The number one cause of death in the UK of men under 50 is suicide. You don't have to be a senior executive to be struggling with life and with the world and with stuff. Yeah. So if you see someone, you know, we can relate it to executives if we want, but I think this is relevant for anyone. If you see someone and you know them well enough and you just think, he or she, they're not right. That's not them. That's not the Chris I know or whoever. Please say something. If you're an executive, like, you know, the scenario you just mentioned, if it's someone who's bottling this up inside and someone who knows they're struggling with all this, if they're self-aware enough to know that they're in that sausage machine that I described, please say something to someone. Go to someone and say, I'm not right, I'm struggling, and here's what I'm struggling with, and I think I might need some help. And The only thing I can say is you just got to trust someone with being vulnerable, because being vulnerable will either save your life if you're in that situation, or if you're an executive, being vulnerable is the superpower that will supercharge your culture, and it will enable you to unleash innovation in your organization. But you've got to say something to someone, and you've got to.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think it's life over legacy now, isn't it? Because that's what it comes down to. So thank you so much, Chris. Where can our listeners find you if they wish to connect?
So the first thing is my name doesn't have a H in it, which trips people up. So my name is Chris Beswick, but it's CRISBESWYCK. You can get me at chrisbeswick.com. Drop me an email, chris@chrisbeswick.com, or find me on LinkedIn, chrisbeswick.com. And I think Nikki, who does all my social media, I'm sure she'll tell you I'm on all the other channels as well. But LinkedIn, email, or website is the easiest way for anyone to find me.
That's great. Chris, thank you so much for being with us today. You've brought honesty, depth, and compassion to a conversation that every leader and really every person needs to hear. You've reminded us that leadership isn't about being invincible. It's about being human. And when we normalize that vulnerability, we not only protect our own well-being, we create a space for others to do the same. To all our listeners, thank you for tuning in to the Healthy Debate Show. Here's a part of Fix You by Coldplay.